Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Miss Gobo, Wembley, Moki, and all the denizens down on Fraggle Rock, no longer as of Friday via Apple TV+. Howie Stanford, the executive producer of Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, offers why when she joins me next. Social media influencer Jason Neubauer is our second guest, out to impact lives nationwide through Affect Change. The pilot for the series shows up next month at the annual Mammoth Film Festival. Cyber Chase turns 20 on PBS and PBS Kids next month, with an early celebration set for Friday. Our second hour begins with executive producer Sandra Shepherd and senior producer Belinda Toporoff. And are you ready for the Showrunners Network? Prolific science fiction TV writer-producer Mark Scott Sacree is sure you are. And we'll hear where this ambitious venture stands from Sacree in our concluding 30 minutes live from Los Angeles. Also ahead, a new head for Hulu, Bull is Ending, No Bull, What's in a Lord of the Rings Name, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. We have a whale of a 2 hours ahead for you, and we're happy you're joining us this Wednesday for the program about TV's current and future. Let's get right to it. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, ring that call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. Also, have a chat room available for you right now. SimonApple04 is the name of the room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon and your Blog Talk Radio tune in a speaker screen, and other people can be live with you. Hallie Stanford from Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, and Apple TV Plus live with us after these news notes. There's a new president of Hulu this afternoon. It's Joe Early, former executive VP of marketing and operations at Disney Plus. Early fills the top Hulu job, opened since last October, when Kelly Campbell moved to Peacock as that venture's president. CBS is about to close the curtain permanently on Bull, the popular offbeat legal drama co-created by Dr. Phil McGraw. The series, starring Michael Weatherly, is now in its sixth season. A date for the final episode has not been finalized. In a Twitter announcement, Weatherly says he will pursue, quote, no new creative challenges, unquote. And with the debut of Amazon's series adaptation of The Lord of the Rings on for September 2nd, there's more to the title, a subtitle. The Rings of Power will be that subtitle because, in Amazon's words, it foreshadows an epic story tying together the major events of author J.R.R. Tolkien's Second Age, The Forging of the Rings. The storyline will cover events prior to Tolkien's The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings trilogy. We'll have more news notes, quickie style, for you after the top of the hour. And now joining us live, an interview exclusive, the executive producer of the Apple TV Plus new series, Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, Hallie Stanford. Hallie, welcome in.
Thank you. So great to be here.
And it's great to have you, Hallie. Where are you calling from this afternoon?
I am calling from Los Angeles, California, specifically Woodland Hills. I'd like to say I'm in Fraggle Rock, but actually I came out of the Rock, and I'm just in Woodland Hills right now.
Well, let's say for this half hour, yes, you're calling from Fraggle Rock directly.
I am.
What was the impetus behind bringing Fraggle Rock back?
Well, you know, I always feel that the universe kind of conspires to bring back shows and books and all kinds of things that we love at the right time. And I think you would agree with me. I feel like the world right now needs Fraggles. We've all been through a lot, and I think magic and joy and hope and everything that Fraggle Rock's about is needed right now in the world. So I'm very excited that it's coming back. The impetus behind it was that I actually had a wonderful meeting at Apple TV Plus, and the executives loved Fraggle Rock just like I did when we were kids, and we were talking about it, and they said, well, what's going on with Fraggle Rock? And I said, well, what do you want to go on with Fraggle Rock? We'd love to bring them back. And so we started the creative process, and then the pandemic hit. And Jamie Ehrlich at Apple called us and said, hey, do you think you could put together a group of shorts with the Fraggles, reaching out to families at home and just, you know, spreading a little joy and hope and fun. And we were like, yes, and we did it. We delivered these shorts, and they were so successful that Apple said, you know what, let's make a show. Let's do 13 episodes. And so we made Fraggle Rock, and here we are. And it's coming out this Friday, and we're so excited.
As you can hear. And by the way, Hallie is the executive producer for the Jim Henson Company, the company that came up with Fraggle Rock back in the 1980s, where it was a Monday night highlight on HBO. Why do you think people really gravitated, kids and adults alike, gravitated to the Fraggles when they were first on in the 80s?
Well, I think for so many reasons. I think, one, you just can't help yourself but smile and feel joy when you are in Fraggle Rock with the Fraggles, right? That, you know, Jim Henson, when he created Fraggle Rock, he wanted to create a show that, you know, made a difference in the world. He said, let's create a show that creates world peace. And Fraggle Rock was the product of that. And so I think everybody feels that in their hearts. They feel it kind of in the DNA of the show. But it's a pretty fun world. You know, the theme song says, dance your cares away, you know, worries for another day. So it's like, come on down and party in Fraggle Rock. So I always feel like the original, and we try to continue that now, is a party. It's a celebration of life and kind of a little bit of a handbook of life to how to live it. And it's an imaginative world. It's a world you want to play in. It's a world you want to be in. And frankly, it's a world I believe was real. I thought you could get to Fraggle Rock. I was pretty sure you could get to Fraggle Rock and Sesame Street. I just needed somebody to tell me how to get there. So I hope that we create that same magic for families when they watch it this Friday.
In fact, if people remember the original series, the opening title has one of the characters going, traveling into the Fraggle Rock world. Is that going to be the case with the new series on Apple TV Plus?
Well, you're definitely going to see in the opening the theme song that we all know and love. You're going to hear that bounce, 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 and it's going to pull you in, and you're definitely going to see how all the worlds are connected. That's my only little sneak peek I'll give you. You got to watch. But you'll definitely recognize some nods to the original in the opening and also be hopefully wowed by new puppet magic.
We're talking with Hallie Stanford. She is the executive producer with the Jim Henson Company of the new Apple TV Plus series, Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock. It premieres this Friday on Apple TV Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, including Apple's own Apple TV. And Hallie joins us live from Fraggle Rock itself, a.k.a. for today, Woodland Hills, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. We're just getting started. We have a big two-hour show for you today, so stay with us. And make a call. Be part of the conversation. 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next episode, third of our free episode week, is this Friday at this hour. And joining us will be, as our lead guest, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Netflix drama, In From the Cold, Adam Glass. His credits include Supernatural and Criminal Minds. It's Adam Glass from the new Netflix series, In From the Cold, which premieres next week. You'll hear him as our lead guest Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Hallie, once you got the go-ahead from Apple TV Plus to bring Fraggle Rock back, update it, bring new characters in, how long did it take to physically recreate or expand the world?
Wow. There's so many ways to answer that because obviously creatively from a storytelling perspective, we were honoring, you know, the original but also expanding the world, creating new adventures, creating new shows. So it was, you know, it was – process took, you know, several months of just scripts and world building to happen. The show itself, we shot for over half a year in Calgary, and building the sets and everything, we started in the fall, and we just kept, you know, I mean, the world just kept building until the very end. It is a very expansive, exciting, practical world. So the whole thing, in some ways, it feels like it happened so fast, but it really took up the entire pandemic from, you know, when we all shut down in March to, you know, delivering it for this Friday for audiences to see. So it's, you know, it's been a journey. It's been a wonderful journey, and it's been a healing journey for all of us, and we're so proud of the work. But it did take this long to get it up and going. But how long have we all dreamed about it happening? I think since we were all little kids, we all wanted to go back to Fraggle Rock, everyone that worked on the show. So I think our whole lives is my answer to you of getting to this point of time.
Mm-hmm. Hallie, were there stories or adventures that couldn't be done in the original series that you're bringing in to this new set of episodes?
Oh, I love that question. The answer is absolutely. You know, we love telling puppet stories at Henson, and there are limitations to what you can do with puppets, but there's also all kinds of really great magic and technology and all the learnings that we have done over the years as producers, even on Dark Crystal and all kinds of other shows that we've done, we were able to really plus the adventures of our show. So you're going to see a lot of action with the characters, a lot of adventure, a lot of stunts, really fun puppet stunts. And so, yeah, I think that's something that you're going to see in the show, is that we were able to, with the level of direction, the level of premium production design, really create a bigger scope for Fraggle Rock, but still honoring the essence. You're going to go there and you're going to go, oh, yeah, this is Fraggle Rock. I get it. This is Fraggle Rock. But it's just like we're going to get to go deeper into it.
Mm-hmm. Apple TV Plus released a clip just about an hour ago to reporters, which shows a scene from one of the episodes where a Gobo is being asked by one of the other Fraggles to accompany him on a trip to outer space. And I'm wondering if we're going to see a lot of that, the idea of not only traveling to different corners of the rock, but also going beyond the rock.
Well, Gobo is an explorer, and he's going to learn that you don't have to push yourself to explore in places that you don't feel comfortable in, but exploring can be something that you do together with friends inside the rock and around your home. So I think that speaks to kids. Having said that, if people don't know Uncle Traveling Matt, I hope they get to know him. Our Uncle Traveling Matt is going to go out into outer space, into our world, and come into our modern world and report back to the rock, just like the original series. So I think that's going to be very exciting, very fun, and yet another way of connecting all of our worlds in this universe together. And we will see Gobo sneak in to Doc home and office as well. So we have a new dock on Fraggle Rock.
Mm-hmm. There are going to be some new characters. And before I ask you about who or what specific characters or denizens you've got coming into the world with this set of episodes, how do you and your fellow Muppet creators, Henson creators, determine where, not only what kind of character you will introduce, but where do they fit in the storyline? Where do they fit into the relationships of the other characters?
Are you talking about the new characters, or are you talking about the Fraggle Five?
The new characters. Yeah.
So, you know, what was really fun with creating new characters is that we were really trying to do modern messaging in the show. You know, Jim Henson wanted this to be a show that transformed the world, and we wanted to take the spirit of that and bring it to this series. And so we talked a lot about, like, what are the issues that are really relevant to families today to make the world a better place? And so you'll see all kinds of topics from, like, dealing with anxiety or dealing with, like, personal, you know, heroes from history and learning the truth behind them, and they may not be everything we thought they were. Just all kinds of different topics that are really important. There's one episode where Boober discovers that his Belluvius lights up, and he's really scared to share that information, that he has this physical difference with his friends. But then we have this character called the Archivist who comes, and she's played by Cynthia Erivo, and really helps him come out and share his Belluvius. And it's those types of messaging that drove the types of new characters that we create. So we have a character named Lyle Craggle, who is voiced by Ed Helms. And he's my favorite character. He makes me laugh so hard. But he plays a character who becomes a refugee that the Fraggles need to take care of and learn to be a good ally to. And so it's just driven out of all these sort of, like, really meaningful topics, but then we give it a spin with our fun, playful, we fragilize them, right? So fragilizing David Diggs was very fun. We have a character named Jamdalyn. He's a bard. He's inspired by Jim Henson's character Cantus from the original. We felt that we couldn't bring back Cantus. He was Jim. So we thought, okay, well, let's create a new bard character. And so David Diggs does play this character. And we did, even though Jamdalyn, you know, he comes to help a character sort of find his own voice, musical voice, but it was fun to design the Fraggles, these little guest Fraggles, to look a little bit like the voices. So I think when you see Jamdalyn, you might see how he was inspired to look a teeny bit like David. So anyway, that was really fun to work on in the show.
Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, just joined us in the chat room. Thanks for coming aboard, Rick. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. Once you develop a character, how do you tailor whoever's going to play that character to, as you just said, find their voice in it?
A couple of ways. With the new characters, let's just talk about Lyle, my favorite, for a second. So we knew in the script who Lyle was, right? We knew the kind of character he was going to be. He was going to be very friendly. He was going to be very welcoming to the Fraggles. He was going to be sort of this representative. But we talked to Ed Helms, and we talked to the puppeteers, and we really got down deep of, like, what does this character sound like? And we workshopped him. We basically, through Zoom, we sat and workshopped him, came up, played with him, gave us, like, ideas for costume and haircut, which always cracks me up. And so then we went to go build him. And once the character was built, and not all the new characters are voiced by, you know, guest stars. You know, one of the characters, I got to tell you, one of the characters reminds me of you, and I cannot wait for you to see him, Barry Blueberry. Please, I beg you to watch Barry Blueberry today. You are going to fall in love with him. And if you are interviewing Johnny Tartaglia ever, he played Barry. You're going to love him. He reminds me of your wonderful energy. Anyway, so the puppeteers will workshop the voices, and the puppet builders will build a character that kind of manifests that character visually, and then it's the brilliant puppeteers and their performance physically, because they also have to find a physical language to the character's personality as well. And so it's this combo of voice, physical performance, and the look of the puppet and the performability of the puppet that brings the character to life. And it is an art form. It really is. It's a dance. And even on the set, you would watch the puppeteers with the new characters and the classic characters constantly practicing, constantly staying in character, constantly plussing the game of these characters so that they feel like they're there and they're living and breathing and they're your friends on and off screen.
Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, premieres this Friday on Apple TV+, Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place, including Apple's own Apple TV. Executive producer Hallie Stanford is joining us live from Woodland Hills, California, a.k.a. for this half hour, Fraggle Rock, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm on with you live from another Fraggle Rock known as New York City, where it's 47 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have some questions or comments for Hallie or many minutes with her, make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, as our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is doing. Coming up near the top of the hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week. Brand new question, 5 prizes in play. They could be yours if you get the answer in correctly and first. And don't forget, we've got more great guests coming your way today on this program. In our next hour, we've got the producers of Cyber Chase, the award-winning PBS tune that is marking its 20th year on the air next month. And then in our final half hour, live from L.A., one of the most prolific people in science fiction television around, Mark Scott Sacree, the author of the popular Twilight Zone Companion. When you hear about the brand new ambitious project he's got going, the Showrunners Network. He joins us live in about, less than 90 minutes from now. Hallie, in terms of other work, it's one more thing about Fraggle Rock before you get to what else is cooking TV-wise at your company. When it comes to Fraggle Rock, what about the music and songs? Were you able to get some of the composers from the 80s version back? Or if not, what new songs, new song styling can we hear in these episodes?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. You know, it was really important for us to really bring the rock, and we were saying like the rock and roll back to Fraggle Rock and really jump in deep. Harvey Mason Jr. is our music executive producer. We are so lucky to have him. And, you know, we took half of the songs in the show are legacy songs that have been reimagined. So you're going to hear all your favorites. And that's so exciting. And it was so wonderful to even kind of reimagine them, have different characters sing different songs. And so that was really special. And then new songs are in the series. And I think that Harvey and his team did a fantastic job. I hope that everybody will come away singing, dancing, you know, as the theme song goes, Dance Your Cares Away. I hope everybody will do that as they listen to the new music in Fraggle Rock. We're so proud of the music.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of 2022 is it going to be for the Henson Company and for you beyond Fraggle Rock?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Not everything I can talk about, but what I can say is that we have so many new things right now in production, close to being greenlit, that are aimed at families. They're, you know, just so proud. They're transformative television. We're just trying to make the world a better place, and we're trying to, you know, entertain families and, you know, bring them together, watching entertainment that can make them joyful and laugh. And, you know, I feel like the world right now needs that kind of television. We also just launched at the start of the year a series on Apple TV Plus called Harriet the Spy, based on the classic book, and it's gotten me cred with my niece. Let me just say that. I'm so happy I finally got through to her. And we also launched more of a series that we're really proud of, and it's been a real hit for moms and little ones, called Word Party. And so we just launched a spinoff on Netflix Kids that is called Word Party Presents Math. And so those are two new shows that have just come up. And like I mentioned, we have some really, really innovative and really important programming coming up. One in particular, can't mention it yet because it hasn't been, you know, press announced, but it's really helping kids deal with issues of anxiety and self-care. So really looking forward to talking more about that one later. But lots of really great stuff coming up from the Jim Henson Company.
Your organization has, over the decades, worked with a lot of pioneering television people. Sesame Street on PBS, NBC with Saturday Night Live, the first season, Fraggle Rock with HBO. Now you work in Apple TV Plus and Netflix. What do you think about the landscape of television these days? And also, now you're able to work with Apple TV Plus, not only on a show like Fraggle Rock, but also a live-action show like Harriet the Spy.
Yes, Harriet is actually animation, just to let you know that. It's what's so fun about that is what's so fun about it is that it's period. I'm sort of proud that we've done this animated period piece from 1964. So we could go to all the sets that we wanted to and have all the cool 60s costumes and be able to afford it for a kid's show. But yes, I think the landscape right now is extraordinary. You know, it's the golden age of television. You've heard it. And for us as producers and creators of content, it's thrilling. We have so many wonderful places now to be able to sell our projects, and also so many wonderful studios in Apple TV Plus in particular to support us. You know, they really want to make a difference in the world. You know, Apple TV and Kids really talks about wanting to help raise the next generation of change makers, and so do I, and so do we at Henson. So I really am excited about the kind of the heart and mission of a lot of these different platforms, and I, you know, they're very supportive. They want us to push our shows premium level, and also it's the first time that I've experienced in the last couple of years networks being very serious and studios and streamers being very serious about wanting to reach the whole family. You hear a lot of talk about, oh, yeah, we want to get the whole family, but it's a lot of talk. But right now, true. And it's actually, to me, very exciting because I think that, you know, coming through this pandemic for families in particular, we're tighter than ever. We want to be together. We want to be entertained together. And we want to have a meaningful experience when we're together, right? So we want it to be fun, but we wanted to have meaning as parents. So Fraggle Rock, hopefully, will deliver that, and it's because of a streamer like Apple that they made that possible.
And one more thing before we go. You can also find Apple TV Plus, the home for all things Peanuts, shows like The Snoopy Show and Snoopy in Space, and other wonderful things with the Peanuts gang as well. Fraggle Rock, Back from the Rock. It premieres this Friday on Apple TV Plus. You can get that on most smart TV sets and smart devices, including Apple's own Apple TV. And for all details about the show and the device and the service, go to tv.apple.com. That's tv.apple.com. Fraggle Rock, Back on the Rock, starts this Friday. Hallie Steinfurd, the executive producer of the program, thanks again for joining us from where you are in California, IA. Congratulations to you and all the Henson people on making it happen. We'd love to have you back to talk more about what Henson's got in the TV pipeline for the rest of the year. It's been a delight having you aboard and kicking today off.
Thank you. I love being here. Thank you for your joyful, fraggly energy. It's been great.
You're very welcome. And can you post it on your character, Barry Blueberry? I'm definitely going to check it out.
I'm so excited for you to check him out. You're going to love him.
All right, Hallie. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, Sanford, executive producer of Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock and Apple TV Plus, joining us live from Woodland Hills, California. More Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way. We're just getting started here. We got 90 more minutes to go plus, and we'll get to that after we get some words in from the fine folks at audible.com. If you're into a soul survivor science fiction mode, have a trying this audiobook out. It's from a great author, Andy Weir, and it's called Project Hail Mary. And it's unlike any space kind of tale or science fiction tale you've ever imagined. And you can. How? Well, with a one-month trial run with audible.com. In case you don't know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and yes, inspiration too. Over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. All you got to do is just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, that one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Can't go wrong there. And while it lasts, health and wellness information can make a big difference for you or someone you love. Remember, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, you're even better shape because you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including one selection from the growing catalog, fast-growing catalog, I might add, of Audible Originals. It's everything from original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man shows. So how about making the day you make the commitment and hear how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know can hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. Remember, for all the details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about what's cooking with the tube, and we're with you Mondays and Fridays usually, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Coming up in our final of our three episodes this week on Friday, we've got Adam Glass. He's the executive producer and showrunner of the new Netflix spy thriller, In from the Cold. Adam's credits, by the way, before this include Criminal Minds and Supernatural. And 1 week from Friday, on January 28th, one of our guests will focus on the growing world of next-gen television. More than 50 markets around the country through local TV stations can now offer next-generation television, including a wide variety of multicast channels and, down the road, interactive programming, advertising, commerce, and more. We'll talk to the managing director of one of the advocacy organizations behind NextGen TV, Pearl TV, and Shell. She will be with us live a week from Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And don't forget, we've got a whale of a 90 minutes coming your way, coming up in our next hour, leading things off from the popular PBS kids series Cyber Chase, which marks 20 years on the air next month. We will have executive producer Sandra Shepherd, and back with us, by the way, for the first time in 2 years. She did Camp TV for Channel 13 WAT, senior producer Melinda Toprol. And then 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, be with us because we got a very special wrap-up guest, prolific science fiction TV writer, producer, the author of the best-selling book, The Twilight Zone Companion, Mark Scott Sacree. Wait till you hear about the new project he's got cooking, The Showrunners Network. It's the most ambitious science fiction television project in the medium existence, and he will tell us all about it. But first, after the bottom of the hour, we will go live to Miami, Florida, and we'll speak with a social media influencer who's trying to get a new series on the air called Effect Change. The pilot's going to be shown next month at the Mammoth Film Festival near Mammoth Mountain in California. We'll be speaking with Jason Neubauer. He'll join us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're hearing the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tuna.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, BTR is your host for the popular January Jones Show. Check it out and be empowered. Fridays, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, the January Jones Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Wednesday afternoon, 19th of January, 2022. Sam Nab, I'm with you live from New York, 47 degrees at the top of the hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb is from Philadelphia in the room right now, and you're invited to join him. From the get-go, Tomorrow Be Televised has showcased new talents by presenting a varied selection of TV series pilots that are presented at both TV and film festivals around the country. And one of the first showcases for new TV pilots will be happening next month at the Mammoth Film Festival. that'll be taking place outside Mammoth Mountain in California from February 3rd to the 6th. At least 7 TV pilots will be showcased. One of them, you might say, is a real-life Route 66. It's called Effect Change, where two social media influences, like the characters in that very famous 1960s television series, go around the country in search of culture and, more importantly, in search of impacting people's lives. Joining us live from Miami, Florida, one of the co-creators and producers of the series, real-life social media influencer Jason Neubauer. Jason, great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Thanks for the warm intro.
You're very, very welcome. And you're one of the sun and warm fun capitals of the U.S. of A., where you are in Miami at this very half hour. Jason, how did you decide to put together this series, or at least the pilot of it?
You know, I had a pretty long journey as an entrepreneur, I kind of became the guy in influencer marketing and building, you know, brand showcases. And, you know, it was really this culmination of, I was seeing how much of this content that was putting out there. And it was so much of, look at me, look at me, look at what I'm doing, right? And it was about the same time that my son was born. And I said, look, if this is the future of where we're going and we're seeing the transition of power, you know, from traditional cable to these influencers, you know, I thought I had the ability to be able to make a change. And I was like, well, what if we flip the script? What if we actually take their power for good? We pick one of their influencers, right? And we give them the resources to dream, like to build their dream business, you know? So it's a combination of time, money, and knowledge, you know? We just believe that everybody deserves that spark at one point, and we give that to them.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to, first of all, put the journey together and then put the pilot together?
You know, the pilot took us, you know, really like 3 to 4 months to actually put together, you know, because it's unscripted, right? So it really just kind of came naturally. I mean, the two people that we affected in the show, Johnny actually showed up in my driveway, you know, and I just had the idea for it. And I called Alan, the guy I created with. I'm like, I think the guy just showed up in her driveway because it was the best car wash that I ever had. And his dream was just to own. And that was it. And, you know, when I actually gave Johnny the car, you know, for me, that beat any personal moment that I ever had in success in business, you know, and I don't think people understand that, like, you know, he's inspired me equally, if not more, than I probably did for him.
Mm-hmm. Hey, explain who Johnny is.
So Johnny is just a normal guy whose dream was to have a mobile car wash business. He actually lost his eye in a firework accident, saving his knees, about 4 years prior, and it just kind of felt like he lost his spark for life. And all he ever really needed was just that, like, one break, you know. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to give it to him, you know. We gave him his car. We gave him supplies. We gave him a laptop, and I taught him actually how to build a business, you know. They won't see in the pilot is, you know, we've had some time since COVID happened, is now Johnny actually has 12 employees. He has 4 trucks, and he washes all the Lamborghinis and Ferraris for celebrities like all over Miami, right? So it just proved this theory that I had that we could all win together. You know, to me, it's about moving out of this old paradigm where it's I have to win and you have to lose, right? Like, there's space for all of us to win. And I think Johnny's example of that story, we proved that, and we're going to replicate that multiple times over multiple episodes this season.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the other person that's profiled in this pilot. How did you make contact with her, and what's her ambition?
Yeah, so the amazing part about the show is it's a true co-creation. So Bryant and Spence are the two other influencers in the show, and they found this girl named Sasha Calle, and her dream was to be an amazing singer, actress, and we were able to get her a private audition on American Idol, and that was her dream. It was her mom's dream, and she came from a pretty tough home. There was a point in her life where she got stranded in Colombia and couldn't actually move over to the U.S., and so we were able to get their private audition on American Idol, and even though where the show ends, she ends up getting cut in the second round. But what happened after that was the amazing part was she ended up getting cast on the TV series Young and the Restless, and now she is officially the new DC Comics Superwoman in the movie The Flash that I believe came out in November. So she's an absolute star. You know, this came from a girl that I gave her her first hotel room by herself, you know, and it's incredible. So we're going to do something later on in the season, you know, related to show where they're at now and really show the impact of what we're creating. But, you know, as much as it's a show about people helping their dreams come true and build business, you know, to me it's also important to educate as well, right? There's layers where we bring in tools that help you affect your own self, right, while highlighting also companies like Minicore, for example, who has an amazing water filter, membrane filter, that we can take literally contaminated water without power and make it drinkable, you know, to their nonprofit Change Through Change. But we can run campaigns across the world and raise the awareness of how we can all have clean water, and here's what we can do to all make ourselves better. So it's a combination of entertainment, inspiring, and education.
Mm-hmm. The name of the TV series pilot is Effect Change. It's one of at least seven that will be shown February 3rd to the 6th in person at the annual Mammoth Film Festival outside Mammoth Mound in California. And we're speaking with social media influencer Jason Neubauer. He is the co-creator and producer of this proposed series. He joins us live from Miami, Florida this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised on this two-hour special edition on this Wednesday afternoon of the 19th of January, 2022. Simon, I'm with you up the coast from Miami in New York, where it's now 48 degrees after the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for Jason? Make a call. Be part of the action. Interact with us at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In case you just joined us, this is the second of three episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised we are doing. Our first one was on Monday, where we had Keon Sanelli. He is the chief executive officer of the new telehealth on TV venture, Independa, which is now available on LG smart TV sets that were made last year or are being made this year. If you missed that episode, and believe me, it was a revelatory episode, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version of it also. You'll find it at Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the iRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, and Reason. It's one thing for an established television series, Jason, to do what they can do to the max to help and assist somebody in making a difference in their life. Because you're coming from a place of, you know, nobody knows your TV series yet, what kind of obstacles did you face in terms of trying to impact these two people?
You know, I've been on this entrepreneur journey since I was 23. You know, I was just always a kid that no matter what, I'm not smarter than you, I'll outwill you. You know, I started my first company with the money I won on Wheel of Fortune. You know, I took $32,000 and, you know, moved to San Francisco and built two tech companies from there. You know, I was able to invent a thing called the Cool Box that was on Shark Tank. You know, and I think like most people in their 20s, I was just on this goal to make a lot of money, and I had a lot of passion, right? But to me, the moment my life changed was, you know, when I had my son, and then I wanted to create things with purpose. You know, I started doing campaigns for charities and it's purpose, and it just kind of, you know, aligned with the right time in the world. As you can see, like traditional cable doesn't have the power anymore, you know? So my partner, Robert Blagman of Global Media Fusion, it's not like we've stopped during the pandemic. You know, we've been locking around, you know, distribution deals all across the world. So when we finish the first season, I have access to linear and digitally almost a third of the planet. You know, to me, it's the hardest part is making sure that you're making pure content with the best stories. Because at the end of the day, like, I want to be a brand that we can trust, and I don't want anybody to be able to take that, you know, creative freedom from us. But to me, great things take time, you know, and effect change is my purpose. And I think when you build things from the heart, you know, doors start to open. And I think people recognize that through the content when they watch it. And if you meet me on an individual level, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I've been through more than you could possibly have. I've been up, I've been down, you know, but it humbles you. And at the end of the day, I think when you live with purpose and you create with purpose, you know, good things happen.
How did Mammoth Film Festival learn about what you're doing? Did you contact them or they contacted you?
They found me, you know. Originally, when we shot the pilot, the original title was going to be called Santa Claus Effect. And so when we actually launched the trailer, you know, it got close to 20 million views in the first 30 days with, you know, 99.8% like positive feedback, right? So, you know, we knew we had something, you know, and we were all systems go, ready to go, and then, you know, COVID happened. But, you know, that this period right now it gave me as a person individually, I think there's a big difference between intention and embodiment of a mission. And I think that, you know, I use this time to grow better and to become the person I wanted to be. So when this does air and it does go out and we can have influence on the world, like I truly represent that within myself, you know?
Yeah. Is Mammoth the first film or TV festival that is showing the pilot?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really exciting. So, and I'm originally from California, so, you know, I grew up going to the mountains there. So I'm a newbie to it, so it'll be exciting.
Yeah, and you're being joined by at least producers, creators of six other pilots, both scripted and unscripted, I believe, and they may have more, by the way. Incidentally, we are trying to do a second segment about some of the other pilots that Mammoth Film Festival is presenting. Where are you at in terms of turning this into a series? Have you gotten any nibbles from any of the any content service?
Yeah, we do. I can't talk about that specifically, like, at the moment. Again, Robert, we've been working on these relationships. To us, it's about having the right home without touching the creative freedom, you know? So we're going to make our final decision on where we're going to go specifically, like, in the U.S. after the film festival. I just didn't want to make any decisions prior to the film festival related to that. So I'm excited. You know, to me, at the end of the day, I just want the most people to be able to see it, feel it, and hopefully inspires them to make a change in their life or to help somebody. You know, I think that, you know, people don't understand that you don't have to give money to somebody to make an impact, right? Like, just you don't know what that person is going through. Sometimes that person at the end of the day just needs to know, like, can you shoot them a text? Like, are you okay? I've been through this, you know, like, you can get to the other side. And I think if more of us do that on a daily basis, you know, we'll be in a little bit better place later on.
Yeah. Given the landscape of television right now, where you have so many programming services that you can put a show like this on, whether it's Disney Plus or Apple TV Plus, so we just had Fraggle Rock's people on last half hour, or Hulu or Amazon or Netflix or Topic, and there's some upcoming ones too, like Binge and the one that's being proposed by former President Donald Trump, TMTG Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, et cetera, plus a lot of programming services are available on smart TV sets and smart devices and multi-channel bundles like Tubi and Zumo and Fubo and so forth. What's going to determine which network or service is right for you and right for this program?
Well, specifically for each country, right? Which one is going to give us the most reach? You know, at the end of the day in television, there's two ways that you can go, right? You can create something and sell it to the network where they own everything, or you create it yourself and you license it on a global level. And to me, I'm building a long-term brand, right? And so we're going the licensing slow route. So at the end of the day, it's about what is their reach? What is the time slot? Do we maintain creative control, you know, and what's a fair value proposition in exchange for that, right? I just know that if I create the great content, it'll go to a great home, you know?
When I was watching clips from the pilot last week, it, as I said earlier on, it sort of reminded you of a real-life Route 66 in that when watching that classic 1960 series, which you can see on many episodes on YouTube, it's all about these two travelers who go around the country. They experience the culture. They experience the lifestyles of various people and cities and towns and villages, and they get involved to some degree in what is going on for that week's episode. Do you see your series being like that too in a real life way, that it's like a Route 66 where you and the other influencers not only impact and help, but you also discover things about this nation?
Yeah, 100%. Look, I think it's important to shine light in every aspect, you know. I think when you're making change, specifically, I think the greatest impact I can make is in the U.S. because that's what I know the most about, right? But the cool part about the show is everybody gets to have their own story. So that influencer, where they're from, gets to pick who they affect of one of their fans, right? So it's going to highlight all different parts of the U.S. But, you know, our plan is it's not going to be one American or a bunch of Americans going out to change the world, you know. Once we film the U.S. and it's syndicated worldwide as we head into season two, it's all about localizing the licensed versions, you know, to these different countries. Like, it has to be about that country within that country if we're truly going to believe a lasting global impact and just want the name Effect Change to be across the board. That's going to help bring everybody together.
It sounds like your game plan already takes into account the idea of spinning off separate versions for separate countries, whether it's England, France, South Africa, India, et cetera. Is that the game plan, sort of to have, let's say, a network of these shows that can be done within a specific country's culture?
100%. I personally spent a lot of time in London, and talking with Channel 4 and figuring out which is the best network for that country, right, and which gives it the best fit. So, Robert and his team and my team, we've spent the last 2 years looking at where are going to be the right homes for the localized versions, and that's, we joked about it actually yesterday. We're like, oh, yeah, we're going to be big in Ghana, right? Like, you don't truly know until you put it out there where that impact is going to be and stick, right? So we'll know where to put our focus, But to me, it's all about I could sit here and talk about what's my A to Z, right? But I work in, like, hyper-focused action steps. What's my A to B? My A to B is I need to film 8 to 10 episodes of really amazing pure content that's going to inspire and educate people in the U.S. And once I do that, I'll know the next step.
You're hearing Jason Neubauer. He is the co-creator and producer and social media influencer behind Effect Change. It's one of the pilots that will be shown February 3rd to the 6th in person at the annual Mammoth Film Festival outside Mammoth Mountain in California. Jason joins us live from Miami, Florida this half hour on Smart Be Televised, where it is now 48 degrees here in New York, where we originate from, every Monday and Friday, and sometimes on Wednesdays, too. Simon Appel, I'm with you live for the ride. With a question or comment, many minutes with Jason, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Stay tuned. Coming up for the top of the hour, our new classic trivia question, and if you're first with the correct answer, 5 prizes await you if you're correct and you're first. Stay tuned. You could be our first trivia winner of 2022. Jason, side conversation. What was it like for you to, A, be on Wheel of Fortune, and then, B, years later, be on Shark Tank?
Tony Robbins talks about, different, forks in the roads moment, and Wheel of Fortune, I tried out in college because it was randomly right next to our college when we came back from spring break, and so when I actually found out I made the show, it was right after I graduated college. And, that's when I entered corporate America for about a year. And, it was the first time I was doing something in my life that, I liked, but I wasn't passionate about it, And I knew that there was something more out there. And I looked at Wheel of Fortune as my opportunity. So I actually bought this book called Winning on the Wheel. They stopped publishing in 1989. And it walked you through the process. And it had 5,000 hangman puzzles in the back of it, right? And so when I backpacked through Europe, I had the Wheel of Fortune app, and I just studied it, And it was just going to be my way out, right? I looked at it, I was like, okay, my goal was to win $20,000, and I set that intention. So when we got there, you had to draw golf balls to see which episode you were. So I got episode 4, which is good because I got to watch some and I got to feel it out. And then I really wanted to be in the red spot next to Pat. Why? I have no idea, but it just felt like where I wanted to be, And the first puzzle is like a toss-up, right? I click in. I look at the crowd. I look at my parents. I look at Pat. I look at Vanna, and nothing comes out of my mouth. I just epically fail. I just say, my bad, Pat. And I'm like, oh, my God, everything I trained for, I just absolutely collapsed, right? So I kind of grew back, and I knew the prize puzzle was, important. So it ended up coming back to me, and it was song lyrics, and it was, take me by the they called me the Onder. And as I was spinning, I'm like, man, this is a W. And I was like, if this doesn't go on bankrupt, I'm about to win 20 grand, And it landed, one outside of it on 2,500, and then, I won that in a 10-day cruise to the Panama Canal and $1,000 to candyapples.com. And then I was just flowing from there. But at the same time, I kind of felt like it was my moment because at that point, I've done nothing in my life, right? And you have to tell a story in the beginning. And I said I ran with the bulls in Pamplona. And then my last puzzle was actually take the bull by the horns, where I won another 13,000, So I ended up winning 32,695. And that was amazing. I ended up missing my bonus puzzle. But I was just so hyped up. It was a hard one to get, but I remember sitting in traffic and I was like, look, I know from this moment that anything that I put my mind to, I can execute, right? I knew nothing about the show. I knew nothing about the process, but I studied it. I prepared And even with adversity, I still executed in the moment, you know, and I've really always tried to apply that to my life. And sometimes even when I get down or going through, you know, difficult times, I really just try to bring it back to that fork in the road of those moments where you remember that you're great. And I think that's important for people to remember that, you know, that it's in all of us. And sometimes you just got to remind yourself that it's there and bring it back up.
Mm-hmm. Shark Tank, which is now in its second decade on ABC, and you can see the reruns, of course, nightly on CNBC. The thing about that show is that it really has been a stepping stone for a lot of entrepreneurs. It's also been a great keyhole for the rest of society to learn, like, what does it take to pitch a product? What does it take to enroll people along the lines of a Alex Rodriguez or a Mark Cuban or Barbara Corcoran or Kevin O'Leary to take an not just take an interest in what you're doing, but also to back you up financially?
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible checkbox to my career, right? I mean, I always loved the show, but I only built software, you know, and their show is focused on mass market consumer products, right? So my friend Chris Stoikos and I, he was doing some marketing for The Coolest Cooler, and we were like, dude, why don't we make this a toolbox, you know? So we took our marketing skills, we put it on Indiegogo, you know, we did like a little close to 400,000 in pre-sales. And this is why you always got to be kind to people in life, right? Because I submitted that video, and then I got a text from my friend who, in college, we were 18 years old, he was a big pumpkin for Halloween, I was a big Snoopy, but I paid him his first $200 to film something, right? And turns out he ended up being one of the AP producers on Shark Tank, and he saw our tape, you know? He wasn't the reason that we got on, you know, we had a good business, but it definitely did help probably in some way, right? But even knowing somebody, it didn't help expedite the process. They're very tight. Like, you have no idea when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. But the cool part was I went back to the same sound studio where I filmed Wheel of Fortune, and it was just one set over, you know. So to go back there 8 years later on a completely different track was really incredible. What most people don't know is, I mean, you don't know when you're going to go film, right, in that part of the day. But from when they tell you it's go time, it's about 5 minutes. So – you know, you walk into this room, and then there's 90 seconds that's really awkward where they're adjusting the camera, it's going, and then Chris and I were like, okay, we'll just give each other a fist bump, and we'll go, you know? And so we started the pitch, it was going well, and then they turned off the audio on our cool box. So, like, the end of our pitch didn't go well. We had this whole plan to do lemon ginger cayenne shots, so we were going to pass out. We aborted all that, and you know, we went in there, we're going to get 5 offers, right? We're about 30 minutes in, and it just feels like it's going horrible, you know? Like, we have one offer from Damon. You know, Chris is freaking out a little bit. I'm just, you know, working with just listening to the investors, you know? What people don't understand is that when they talk over each other, it's really hard to hear, right? And then you're also trying to filter, what are they just saying for TV? And then also, they actually know nothing about your business, like your business, like prior to going into the tank, right? So your processing power, you know, by the end of it is wiped, you know? They don't show that, you know? So to us, okay, there was this pivotal point where they asked Chris a question, and he stuttered. And I just look over, and he pulls out his lemon ginger cayenne shot, and I'm like, man, whatever. So I pull out mine, right? And I chug it, and then Cuban goes, what the hell are you guys drinking? We're like, lemon ginger cayenne shot. It's good for the soul. It'll clear the mind, you know? So then we pass them all out, and then it just changed the whole tone of the room, you know? And then Cuban went from there saying something about something in your story and, like, being in Thailand. I said, no, Mark. I'm like, this is the exact opposite. We're two guys that are self-made, started with nothing, came from Wheel of Fortune. You know, one of my contacts had a business with him, and that gave us the credibility. But from there, Mark, he was like, and they didn't air this, but Mark goes, look, it's one of the coolest entrepreneur stories I've ever heard. He's like, this isn't technology enough for me. But then he actually helped us negotiate to get our deal with Lori. So as much as dramatic as they made it, like, feel, it actually was really friendly and warm at the end. But, like, I didn't know what happened for, like, 3 days because it just took a while for it to actually catch up, you know. So that was really exciting.
Final question, Jason. When will you know what network you will go with for this series?
I can make that decision. That will know within the next 45 days.
All righty. We will be all ears to hear what happens. And we would love to have you back, Jason, the show. When you get the deal and you're ready to premiere the show on whatever network or service you're going to do it, we'd love to definitely have you back. In the meantime, the pilot is called Effect Change, and you can catch it if you're in the area of Mammoth Mountain in California between February 3rd and 6th at the annual Mammoth Film Festival. There will be other TV pilots as well, and we hope to have some of those other TV pilot creator producers with us an upcoming episode of this program. For more details about all of the programming that will be taking place there in person, there may be some virtual stuff too, here's where you go online, www.mammothfilmfestival.org. That's mammothfilmfestival.org. Effect Change, one of the TV pilots that will be there. Mammoth Film Festival, February 3rd to the 6th in Mammoth Mountain in California. Jason Neubauer, the co-creator and producer and social media influencer behind Effect Change, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on having your pilot there, first time out for it, and hopefully it will result in more people interested and down the road, not too far down the road, a series that we will all see.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and I'll keep you posted on the journey.
You're very welcome, Jason. It's a pleasure, and all the best, and hopefully your series will impact in a great way a lot of people who definitely deserve the impacting.
Thank you. I appreciate the support.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Take care.
Jason Neubauer joining us live from Miami, Florida. Well, now it's time for our new classic trivia question of the week. We have five prizes in play. Two of them are books. We have the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook. We have Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life. We've got Loud House Crayons from Nickelodeon. We have a Freak Brothers t-shirt from Tubi, the multi-channel bundle from Fox. And we also have the DVD from the CBS and BYU TV special from last month, 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, with bonus material also. And that can all be yours if you're first to come through with the correct answer to this question. Name the Cartoon Network and TBS series co-created by Cartoon Network and TBS founder Ted Turner. Name the Cartoon Network and TBS series co-created by Cartoon Network and TBS founder Ted Turner. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address, so if we have you as the first correct answer, you get the prizes ASAP. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter, Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, as we like to say around here, in order to win, play it in. Do so, and all the very best. And we have time in our second hour. We will repeat the question for you, okay? So good luck, and again, all the very best. You're listening to Marvy Televised, the program all about TV's current and future, now in its 15th year on the air, and we're with you live, usually Mondays and Fridays at this hour, on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Remember, if you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can check us out 24/7 on podcast through the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Verbal Reason, and Apple Podcasts. You also check us out on iTunes, Spreaker Podcast, and Apple TV as well. It's Apple TV, the device. Okay? Okay. Coming up, we have a very big hour for you, number two. It will have at the bottom of the hour, in about 30 minutes from now, we'll be joined by the prolific science fiction TV episodic producer-writer, Mark Zachary. He is the author of the best-selling book, The Twilight Zone Companion, and wait till you hear about the brand-new ambitious project he's working on, The Showrunners Network. He'll detail it all for us in about 30 minutes from now. But first, Cyber Chase, the award-winning PBS tune, marks 20 years on the air next month with an early celebration. You will hear from two of its key people, executive producer Sandra Shepard and senior producer Melinda Toporoff, the both drumming next to the Big Apple, after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, it's the Hilltop Radio Show. It's a very unique musical program, and it will entertain you to the max. The Hilltop Radio Show tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to hour number two of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Wednesday afternoon. And to those of you just joining us, at the top of the hour. Tom and Ab, I'm with you live from New York. Had a great first hour, and we got an even better second hour in store for you. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call in your question or your feedback to our guests. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem. Use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker tune in screen, follow the instructions, and other things live with you. The dynamic duo behind PBS's Cyber Chase joined me here in the Big Apple after a round of News Note quickies. Bravo will give Watch What Happens Live 2 more years, taking the late night series to the end of 2023 and here on the air. Andy Cohen continues as host. Former Daily Show and current The Problem host Jon Stewart will receive the 2022 Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Stewart will get the annual honor April 24th in a televised ceremony from the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Glad Media nominations for 2022 went public earlier today. TV series in the running for awards include Hacks, RuPaul's Drag Race, Dickinson, The Chi, Pose, and 9/11 Lone Star. Adam Ruins Everything creator and subject Adam Conover has a new series in play at Netflix titled The G Word, premiere later this year. And season 28 of Real Sports with Brian Gumbel is HBO January 28th. And that is News Notes for today. By the way, we understand the lead story will be about the situation with the International Olympic Committee and China, the host of the upcoming Beijing Games, taking place in about 2 weeks, with coverage on NBC and Peacock. And that is News Notes for today. One of the greatest track records in television is PBS and children's television. Think of all the great shows on that service throughout the decade. Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Friendly Giant, What's New, The Electric Company, Square One Television, 3-2-1 Contact, Arthur, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one of the most popular right now is Cyber Chase. And believe it or not, it will mark a very special anniversary. 20 years on the air on PBS and PBS Kids next month. But you don't have to wait till next month for the celebration. In fact, the celebration will start Friday. And here to tell us all about it are the two key players in Cyber Chase's run on PBS and PBS Kids. First up, executive producer Sandra Shepherd. Sandra, welcome to the program.
Hi, Simon. Great to be here.
And it's great to have you. And joining us also with you is the senior producer of the program and somebody who's been on this show 2 years ago when she was involved in a very special project from WAT here in New York called Camp TV, Melinda Toporoff. Melinda, welcome back.
So much. Very happy to be back.
Sandra, why has Cyber Chase done so well for nearly two decades?
Simon, that's a great question. And it really is a milestone for the project. I like to say it's 20 years in counting because we've got a lot of new content coming up this new season. But I think it's because, first of all, we took a topic that many would think is pretty challenging, and that's mathematical problem solving, and we put it in adventures that make the topic exciting and accessible to so many kids. So for those who don't know what the series premise is, we focus on a cast of real kids who in every episode go into the cyber world, and they're there to outwit the bad guy, who is played brilliantly, or I should say voiced brilliantly by Christopher Lloyd, and they use their problem solving and their creative thinking skills. And I think for kids at home, they relate to the adventures, they learn new mathematics, and they also love our characters. They're lovable, they're curious, and every episode is a new adventure. The cyber world is vast. So it's fresh every time.
Mm-hmm. Melinda, how does Cyber Chase build upon other shows like Sesame Street and Square One Television that have tackled math and math issues and not only go beyond in animated form, but also you also deal with another interesting world, and that's the world of literacy about the environment?
Yes. You know, over the past few years, we've begun to add a layer of educational storylines that tap into kids' love of nature and promote positive ways, kid-sized ways of being active within their communities. So I think, you know, it's something that adds yet another relevance to the series, and delighted to be providing that for kids ages 6 to 8 to have some sort of ownership over their own world.
Mm-hmm. Sandra, when kids see an episode of Cyber Chase, what they don't see is what it takes to put that episode on, to write it, to animate it, to voice it, to provide the backgrounds, the music, and so forth. How long does it take from, let's say, conception of an episode to when you see it on the air? What is the process like to build an episode of your series?
It's really an amazingly long process. and people are always surprised. It takes us about 18 months. And, you know, it always starts with what is the big idea that we want to get across. And we work with, first of all, math and now environmental science experts to help us think about what are those topics out there that are important for kids in this space. So, you know, in the new season, we focus on, you know, migration. We go under the sea and we help kids understand that, you know, coral is a living thing and, you know, why it's important to preserve it. And so it always starts with what's the big idea of the topic? And then we bring in our writers, and the writing process takes, you know, an extensive amount of time. You know, we go through multiple drafts with our advisors, and then it gets animated, and that's another 9-month process. So, you know, it's an incredibly collaborative effort. We're very careful, because when you do a show that involves education, you know, mathematics and environmental literacy, you want to get it right. You know, an oval is an oval. It's not a circle. And so we are very careful with our content, which just takes time. But it's a wonderful process. And I have to say, we've been working with the same head writer since day one. And then more recently, we've got lots of new writers who grew up with the show, who've now joined it as writers. So it's a wonderful process.
Mm-hmm. Melinda, where do you feel that the series has made the most impact on children and how they understand math?
You know, I feel like that might be a more appropriate question for Sandra, who is...
Sure.
...from day one.
I'll tackle it. I mean, Simon, we have heard from fans over the years, from families. We've done research. And I think one of the big takeaways is that kids see math in these exciting, even though it's in the cyber world, they're practical situations, where through trial and error, you can come to a solution. And I think they gain a sense of self-confidence. It's a, you know, it's a way to visualize math and, you know, through an experience that they might not have had differently in their schoolwork. And so they build self-confidence. And we found they've actually built their problem-solving skills and content knowledge. And I'll say one of the things that is most rewarding as a producer is to hear from your audience a decade or two later. You know, kids tell us, you know, I have gone on to study mathematics, you know, at a higher level of education, or I've gone on to a career, you know, in biotechnology, and I was sparked by your show. I was a fan. It helped me see math in a different light. And that, you know, there's nothing better than that, to see a fan who's truly been impacted long-term by the show. So I think it builds a sense of confidence and really a sense of attainment, you know, that if you're persistent, you know, you can solve those problems. So.
Mm-hmm. Cyber Chase, the award-winning series, will mark its 20th anniversary next month on PBS Kids. That is the network that's available in some areas as a multicast channel. In some areas, it's also available on your smart TV set or smart TV device. And the new season will debut on Friday, February 23rd, in a very big way, a 2-hour run with 4 new episodes from 7 to 9 p.m. on PBS Kids. We've got the two people who make Cyber Chase happen, executive producer Sandra Shepherd, and senior producer Melinda Toporoff. They're both with us live here in New York this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York also. It is right now 48 degrees at the top of the hour. If a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Make the phone ring. And here's the number to use, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, the third of our three episodes this week, we'll have from the brand-new Netflix spy thriller, In From the Cold, executive producer and showrunner Adam Glass. His previous credits, producing such shows as Supernatural and Criminal Minds. Adam Glass from Netflix's new series, In From the Cold, which premieres next weekend, right here, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Be Televised. Melinda, how long have you and Sandra and everybody at CyberChase been thinking about how do we celebrate 20 years on the air?
I would say at least for the past year. And, you know, we've been plotting different ways of celebrating everything from on air, which, you know, as you mentioned, January 21st is we're doing PBS Kids is doing a marathon from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They've given us the time spot for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings. And those episodes were actually chosen by our fans through a online fan voting opportunity, which we did a while back. And, you know, we've been working on promos and the anniversary logo and, you know, just came up with a T-shirt design. And so this has been going on and been in the works for a while. And then, of course, there's, you know, ways we want to be helpful to our parents and teachers and caregivers out there. So we're, you know, created special articles for PBS Kids, all sorts of fun principles and activities. You can print out your own 20-year party glasses to wear. So there's been lots of excitement and lots of avenues we've been trying to find ways to toot our own horn, so to speak.
Yeah. Melinda, staying with you, as kids around the country were offering their suggestions, did you and Sandra have, like, your own, like, special list inside your head of, oh, I think they're going to pick this. I'm going to pick that episode. They get, you know, and I'm curious whether your choices matched up with their choices, or were either of you surprised by what the audience selected.
I'll take that one. I mean, I think what was really fun is the audience leaned into some of our nostalgia episodes, and we were hoping they would pick our origin story called Lost My Marbles, the very first time you meet the cyber squad and what draws them into the cyber world. And they did. So that was on our list. And then it was fun. They did pick some of our newer episodes as well. One called, you know, Bottled Up, that's set in a skateboarding park that focuses on recycling. But it was really a fun mix. One of my favorites that they picked in this the marathon is called Inside Hacker. And it's a super fun kind of Mission Impossible type episode that teaches about robotic reasoning. But one of our characters actually goes inside the robot bad guy to try to turn off a switch and turn him to the good side. And that was a great episode to produce, and they picked that. So it was a mix, but they definitely leaned into some of our classic episodes. So,
yeah. And Melinda, that's the one that Christopher Lloyd, by the way, got an Emmy nomination for his voice role playing the hacker. What's it like, by the way, to work not only with Christopher but also other celebrities, whether it's Tony Hawk or Bebe Neuwirth or Rico Rodriguez or Danielle McKellar, Jane Curtin, you know, all the different celebrities and personalities that you've worked with over the years?
Well, I will tell you, working with an iconic figure like Christopher Lloyd is outside of being a delight, makes things quite easy. You know, he's certainly the one-take wonder and brings all sorts of dimension to the writing that, you know, he just brings the character to life in a whole new way. So we feel very lucky that he has been a fan of the series since day one and involved since day one, and continues to be involved. Sandra, you want to talk about any other celebrities?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's super fun. You know, we often, because, you know, we're part of the WNET group that produces Cyberchase. We're here in New York, and we would often, you know, look to our friends on Broadway or New York actors to bring into the series. And what we found, I mean, Matthew Broderick, for example, played a father, Max, in a Father's Day special that we did, is that, you know, these actors love to give back to a PBS Kids series. You know, sometimes they had kids themselves who were fans of the shows, but it was super fun for them. You know, Bebe Neuwirth came, you know, gave two great performances as Binky the Cat in an episode that was set inside a pyramid. So I think it's really fun for them, but it's also a way for them to give back to kids, you know, through an educational series. So I think it's a mutual admiration society. And I think it's fun. One other celebrity we worked with, and Melinda can speak to this, but Marcus Samuelson joined a live action segment we do called Cyberchase for Real that's part of every show. And, you know, math is part of our world, and it's certainly part of cooking. And he cooked up an amazing dessert for us and kind of featured the math. And I think that's super fun for families, you know, to see somebody they admire doing something very cool that's also something they can do at home, you know, and replicate
right.
in their own world.
And he is an amazing chef and also an amazing advocate for great cooking. I've tasted his work at different events covering the world of television, and I'll tell you, he and his followers come up with some incredible, incredible dishes.
And I will say what's so delightful about working with someone like a Marcus Samuelson is they are genuinely dedicated to sustainable, you know, and healthy eating and, you know, environmental topics even that, you know, have to do with ideas of food waste and how to, you know, limit that and ways of just taking care of each other and our world. He's a dad and a chef and just a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you have a wish list of celebrities that you would like to have on Cyberchase that for this latest season you were able to get on? Also, do celebrities ever, or fans of the show ever call you up and say, you know, make me a character I can put my voice in? I got an idea for this. Whether it's villain or hero or friend of the Cyberchase crew?
That's a great question. We have had a couple of people approach us, you know, write me into a script. You know, sometimes that's worked. sometimes it hasn't. But it's been fun, you know. You know, Al Roker has been part of our show. He was a news reporter, not a weatherman, but he certainly tapped into his journalism background. So, you know, sometimes we play with that. You know, Tony Hawk joined the show, and we have a skateboarder character in a world, a skating park. So it's sometimes fun to lean into their interests and their backgrounds, and sometimes, you know, celebrities just, you know, they. You know, provide an amazing voice for a cyber character. So it's fun. And I think, as Melinda said, it's so enjoyable for them, and it's kind of a single take. You know, they're so professional and they're so on it that, you know, they usually bring not 100%, but 200% to the role. And, you know, and they do it very quickly. So, you know, it's a win-win.
You're hearing the dynamic duo behind Cyberchase, which next month marks its 20th anniversary on PBS Kids. And you don't have to wait for the new season to debut to celebrate. You can do that starting this Friday on PBS Kids. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night from 7 to 10 p.m., the special Cyberchase Marathon with episodes picked, including the very first one, by its audience. Sandra Shepherd is the executive producer, and Melinda Toporoff is the senior producer. They're both with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And happy year long for the ride, too, on this Wednesday afternoon, the 19th of January, 2022. Sam, I'm with you also from the Big Apple. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. So, of course, your comment in many minutes with our guests. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Stay tuned, because that's the bottom of the hour. We're going live to Los Angeles. We're speaking with maybe the most prolific science fiction TV writer around, Mark Scott Sucree. Wait till you hear all the credits he has. He's also the author of the best-selling book, The Twilight Zone Companion, and he's working on what may be the most ambitious project in the history of science fiction on TV, The Showrunners Network. He joins us live after the bottom of the hour. For both of you, first of all, what do you think about the fact that your series is now sort of in the pantheon of great children's shows in terms of longevity on PBS, whether it's Sesame Street, which is now over half a century old, or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or Arthur, which by the way is wrapping up its run, another long run on public television. What's it like to be part of that collection of iconic PBS series for kids?
Well, I'll just say, I mean, it's obviously a huge honor. I attribute it to, an amazing team, but also to our fans. I think there is really, an appetite out there for content that has big ideas, and kids can learn something and apply it in their own life. I also think, the world of Cyberchase kind of uses a classic convention of, this classic conflict of good versus bad, and there are so many stories you can take exploring that conflict in a cyber world that is so vast. I mean, we create cyber sites that are, tropical islands. We go under the sea. It is a very imaginative world that we can return to it again and again and keep it fresh. But it's, for us, it's just an honor to have 20 years and to look ahead. I mean, we're always looking to innovate in our new seasons. And I think the other part of a show like Cyberchase is, yes, it's absolutely the episodes and the storytelling, the exciting narratives and the education, but we also do a lot through interactive digital games. We create resources for families. We create a classroom collection on PBS Learning Media. So we think of children kind of at the center, but there's a whole group of adults around them, and we try to provide resources for those folks as well to continue to engage with Cyberchase and the kind of STEM content that we provide. And I think that sustains it as well. It's not just a series. It's much more of a multimedia project with many arms and legs.
What adventures can we look forward to with this season that premieres on February 23rd?
So we have, in terms of the kind of topics that we're going to be dealing with, we're dealing with migration, nature appreciation, as Sandra talked about earlier, coral reefs, and, we all sat there kind of going, oh, wow, I had no idea that, coral is alive. It's a thing. It's not just a rock. Sustainable design is a fun new expression of environmental topic for us, where one of our characters is, her name's Jackie. We learn that she's actually interested in becoming a designer herself and wins an internship, but has to make a sustainable design for out of her fashion. And other things like light pollution and trees, but all, done in a really fun sort of, if we may say so ourselves, clever way. So at least 10 episodes, a variety of topics.
Mm-hmm. Melinda, while we have you, you were here 2 years ago when you were doing a project called Camp TV, which at the time was a series that was put together very quickly in the face of the pandemic and with a lot of kids in New York and around the country out from school. What's been the impact of Camp TV? And it's been on for 2 seasons now. And where does it go from here?
Well, you're speaking to lovely of you to refer to us as the dynamic duo. Sandra Shepard's actually the executive producer of that series as well. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have a second season. Not wonderful news that it was necessary programming still in the name of COVID shutting down all sorts of programs for kids. We are actually working right now on our third season and hope to bring it back this summer for kids in a little bit of a different format, but with our same great host, Zachary Noah Pizer, who's on Broadway right now, and fingers crossed that that stays open. He's in Dear Evan Hansen. But, you know, it's been really a delight to give kids who may not have access to, you know, digital or broadband cable. You know, this is a series that was made for public broadcast television. So giving all kids an opportunity to learn and have fun over the summer.
Before you go, you mentioned that along the way of these 20 seasons, you've had a transition in terms of the original writer doing it for many of the seasons, and now this new team of writers. What's it been like? First of all, let us know who the writer is, and because we want to give him an acknowledgement. But also, what's it been like to work with a new generation of writers in recent seasons?
Well, let me just say that you could jump in. Our head writer, George Bloom, has been with us since day one, and he is still, you know, leading the team. But we've got lots of new episode writers and really a very diverse group. So maybe, Melinda, you want to just talk about some of our recent experiences as we turn to virtual writer rooms and working with this new group. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will say that this show ends up looking deceptively simple, but the truth is there are so many layers that go into making it the quality program that it is. So it's not an easy writing gig. And the fact that we still have George Bloom at the helm is a, you know, huge reason why we are continuing to be a successful series. But this past season, we've been trying to, and last season, bring in some new blood, some younger blood that could bring new perspectives to some of the storytelling. You know, one of our characters, Inez, has a Latinx background, and we really wanted to sort of start delving into our characters a little bit more and, you know, felt fortunate to have someone we could turn to, had a bunch of diversity consultants on the project as well, making sure that we're reflecting things in authentic ways. And I will say, you know, much like Camp TV, which came sort of out of a need and COVID-related programming, we had to pivot and find a new way to hold our writers' rooms. So everything went virtual. No more meeting in person. In a funny way, it was extremely efficient. When you don't put everyone in a room and feed them lunch, people just sort of focus and, you know, get the work done in sort of a very laser-focused way. So overall, it's been a really, really productive experience, even though we're all sitting at home.
The Cyber Chase, the award-winning PBS Kids series, goes into its 20th anniversary season on Friday, February 23rd, with all new episodes, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on PBS Kids. But you don't have to wait until then to catch the celebration for year 20. You can start this Friday night from 7 to 10 p.m. on PBS Kids with the beginning of a Cyber Chase marathon that will also happen Saturday and Sunday at those very same primetime hours. PBS Kids is available in some markets as a multicast channel on either the digital signal of a broadcast station or on cable. Other places available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about Cyber Chase and other PBS children's programming, go to online to pbs.org or pbs.org/PBS Kids. Sandra Shepard, Melinda Toporoff, dynamic duo behind CyberChase. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on year 20. Hopefully many, many more. It's been a delight to have you both on.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Both of you take care. And again, congratulations to all of us, to all of you and your team.
Thank you.
Take care, Simon. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Sandra Shepherd and Melinda Topperoff joining us live from New York. When we come back from Los Angeles, Mark, Scott, Sakri, and the Showrunners Network. We'll do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, it's Literature Wednesdays. If you like literature, really like literature, check it out. Literature Wednesdays tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best speech are 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Wednesday afternoon, the 19th of January, 2022. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our remaining guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. We could spend upwards of 60, 90, 2 hours talking to this guest you're about to hear. He is one of the most prolific science fiction TV writer producers. Some of the credits, Star Trek Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5, Sliders, Beauty and the Beast, Forever Night, children's shows like Super Friends and the Real Ghostbusters and He-Man, Master of the Universe, and Space Precinct, the Jerry Anderson series that, if it had a better syndicator, would have been a long run. I love that show a lot. I had a chance to see it on WPX-TV here in New York. You also may know him as the author of the best-selling book, The Twilight Zone Companion. And now he is involved with what probably is the most ambitious science fiction project ever assembled for television, the Showrunners Network. Joining us live, an Interray exclusive from Los Angeles, Mark Scott Zakri. Hi, Mark.
Hi, glad to be here.
And glad to have you with us. Let's bring everyone up to speed. What is the Showrunners Network?
Well, you know, the Showrunners Network is something I came up with recently because so many of my friends who are the great creators of TV series, some of their best shows never got to the audience because they would be hired to write a pilot. It would get made or not even get made, get cut off its script. And for whatever financial reason, the networks and the studios would decide not to make it. And we're talking about guys like George R. R. Martin. He did a great alternate world pilot called Doorways that would have been a big hit show if they had just, you know, gone past the two-hour pilot. And I thought, and so recently I reached out to my fans. My fans have given me over $3 million. That allowed me to open my own studio and start shooting Space Command, which is this big science fiction space-going show. And then off of that, I came up with the idea of the Showrunners Network, where I would create six new science fiction and fantasy shows with my friends who are the major showrunners, the major series creators of the last 20 years. And we would basically raise the money, shoot the pilots, create something where the audience could be part of that whole process all along the way. And if someone like Netflix or Amazon wanted to team with us to pick up a slate of six shows, they could, but they wouldn't determine what gets made. They wouldn't determine whether or not these shows get made.
Who are some of the producers that you're working with?
I'm working with Rocky O'Bannon, who created Farscape and Alien Nation and Sequest and Defiance and Cult, and he's now executive producer on Evil on CBS. I'm working with Mark Fergus and Hawk Ostby, who wrote the movies Iron Man and Children of Men, and more recently they developed and ran the show The Expanse. I have a new Rod Serling project that I'm talking with Rod's family about, Rod's daughters, and it's going to be an astonishing show. It's called Rod Serling's After Twilight. I'm working with Joseph Dougherty, who was for 7 years was the executive producer of Pretty Little Liars and then its offshoot show. He also won an Emmy for 30-something. And I'm working with Michael Reeves, a friend of mine who won an Emmy for Batman the Animated Series and also wrote for Star Trek Next Generation. And nowadays he co-writes novels, the Interworld novels, with Neil Gaiman. So it's quite an amazing lineup. And we're also casting actors that we all love from some of our favorite shows, so Veronica Cartwright and Robert Picardo and Barbara Bain, and on and on and on. It's just amazing. Doug Jones, it's just a phenomenal experience to work with these geniuses.
Yeah. Mark and Hawk were on our show during the first season of The Expanse on Sci-Fi. Wonderful series. I'm thrilled we got the chance to conclude on Amazon recently.
Yes.
Since you've announced the project on YouTube, have other producers come to you and said, hey, bring me into your fold. I have this pilot idea I want to do with you. Any feedback of that nature?
a lot of my friends run major shows. I've been in communication with J.J. Abrams and George R.R. Martin and Guillermo del Toro and so forth, and Neil Gaiman, of course, and sometimes they have overall deals that lock them to Amazon or Netflix where they're limited in what they can do collaboratively, but they're very, very interested in what I'm doing, and we're already laying out the back six beyond the first six series, so there's a lot of possibility moving forward to collaborate with some of those great guys as well, and you know, we'll just see what the future brings, but again, because my fans are allowing me to sort of greenlight myself. In fact, I've just written a book called Greenlighting Yourself that's coming out this year. I can just do whatever I want to do pretty much. And you know, so it's just enormous artistic freedom.
Yeah. Talk about After Twilight, because in the Twilight Zone Companion, which I have and read almost every other day, a number of times in the book you mentioned that for all the scripts that got produced on The Twilight Zone in its original run on CBS, there were many that did not get produced. And
yeah.
Whether it was scripts by Ray Bradbury, by Charles Beaumont, by Serling himself, by such people as Richard Matheson and Arch Obler and others, and the reason why probably weren't, as Buck Howland, the original producer, said in your book, was that either the special effects weren't ready at the time or there were other considerations. For example, you mentioned that Ray Bradbury contributed a script called Heroes Every Tigers, and and Buckhound loved it and wanted to do it, but he said there's like three things that Bradbury wanted us to do in the script. One of them we could do, no problem. Two of them, borderline, and three, forget about it, can't do it. It sounds like after
right.
Twilight, we're finally going to get a chance through you and through Serling's estate to see these scripts actually done, because now you have the technology and the computer work to do it.
Yes, well, also Rod wrote a number of scripts, Rod Serling, that either were done in the era of live television and haven't been seen in like 70 years, or he also wrote a lot of scripts for instance, Night Gallery, that never got made just because he and Jack Laird, the executive producer of Night Gallery, didn't see eye to eye. They couldn't have been more different individuals, whereas Buck Houghton on Twilight Zone was very simpatico with Rod's aesthetic. Night Gallery was not as happy an experience, and yet there's some wonderful, wonderful scripts that Rod wrote. There's two pilots that Rod wrote of Twilight Zone that never got made, and I'm hoping to make those as well. Plus, the coolest part, or one of the cool parts, is after his first big hit show, Patterns, which won him his first Emmy in 1956, Rod dictated everything he wrote into a recorder, and then a secretary would type those things up. And that included scripts, letters, speeches, everything, all in Rod's unique verbal style. And it was long thought that all of those recordings were lost, and recently they found 1,000 of them in a college archive, and they've now digitized those recordings. So we're going to be utilizing those recordings to have Rod himself narrate the show. And it's going to be amazing because this is unreleased material, never been heard by anyone. Now, again, this is all we're just in the talking phase now with Jody and my two dear friends, Rod's daughters, and with the estate. So again, we're hoping, you know, all the stars will align, but so far so good. And but it's just, you know, I mean, my God, to be able to, and we would also be using not just scripts by Matheson and others that have never been made, but scripts by some of the new writers like Neil Gaiman, those kind of people, where if they're in sort of the Rod Serling zone, let us say, we'll also be adapting newer works as well.
And I believe there's also the scripts from at least the second revival, the revival of Twilight Zone in the 1980s,
when they were
putting it in syndication, I believe there were some scripts that were also not used.
Well, there was a script that I wrote for that incarnation of Twilight Zone in the 80s, and it was called Knife Through the Veil, and it was a week away from prep. It was going to be directed by Douglas Hayes, the great writer of Eye of the Beholder and The After Hours and The Invaders on Twilight Zone, Howling Man. And a week before prep, which is a week before shooting, the CBS censors pulled it, saying it was too hard-edged. Now, nowadays, it would be not hard-edged at all. But that was really a shame, and I'm very proud of that script, and so we're going to be making that script as well.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of Douglas Hayes, I'm happy you brought him up. I think this man, what he did on Twilight Zone was incredible. He should have won an Emmy Award for his work. Unfortunately,
yes,
at the time, they did not give out directing awards for specific episodes. But if they did at the time, he would have won hands down for at least a couple of them, including Eye of the Beholder, one of the great half-hour episodes of all time.
I agree, absolutely. And Doug became a very dear friend. I started writing The Twilight Zone Companion when I was 21 years old, and he became a dear friend and mentor until the end of his life. And he was just a brilliant, brilliant man, and just a dear soul.
So when will you know if you're going to be able to move forward with doing the Showrunners Network, given the fact you have so many networks and plumbing services out there, whether it's Netflix or Apple TV Plus or Amazon or Peacock or HBO Max, et cetera, that I would think would want to work with you?
Yes. Well, I am. Here's where it stands right now. I actually have my own physical studio. In fact, we're building a space station set right now. We've been building an alien spaceship as well. We're going to be shooting in about a week, and then just ongoingly shooting. Meantime, I have been talking to executives at Netflix and Amazon and other networks, as you mentioned, and we're locking down representation with CAA and another company called Zero Gravity. And once we have that locked down, then we'll go in officially to pitch this. But I'm not even stopped. I'm not waiting for it to sell. We have the wherewithal now to shoot stuff. So we've already had the first two table reads on Sweet Haven, which is the show I'm creating with Rock Neil Bannon, and we're going to be shooting that in the next few months, the pilot of that. We have a cast already. It's got Gates McFadden and Bob Picardo and Bill Mumy and on. So there's no reason to wait, quite frankly. And it's just, you know, whenever the networks and I have my own channel on YouTube. It's called Mr. Sci-Fi. And I put the first hour of Space Command on that, and it's gotten 3 million views. And so that's a bigger rating than most TV shows get on whatever network or platform. They're lucky if some of them get 300,000 views. And so because I can reach my audience directly, I'm not reliant on networks and studios. If they come aboard, they bring more money and they bring the ability to promote. They can bring a promotion budget. But since I can reach my audience directly, I'm just going to keep making what I want to make.
And in a moment, we're going to talk more about both Space Command and Sweet Haven. I love the premise of that show with Rock and Band. We're going to talk about that with Mark Scott Sacree. He is the person behind the Showrunners Network. He is also the author of the very wonderful best-selling book, The Twilight Zone Companion. If you've never seen it, it is must-reading. It's now in its third edition, available on Amazon.com. Mark joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Zap the phone in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Once again, our third of three episodes this week comes your way on Friday, and my lead guest will be the executive producer and showrunner of the brand-new Netflix series. It's a spy thriller called In From the Cold, Adam Glass. His credits include producing Supernatural and Criminal Minds. Adam Glass from In From the Cold premieres next weekend on Netflix. He's with us live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I'm wondering if Sweet Haven is sort of a throwback to another one of the great Twilight Zone episodes, Kick the Can.
It's similar in the way that it's an exploration of aging. The basic notion is that, and this is actually something that Rock and I came up with before the pandemic, interestingly enough, essentially a bioengineered disease gets out of hand and kills everyone in the world under 60. And so the people 60 and above have to figure out how to save humanity when they can't reproduce. And meantime, the clock is ticking because there'll be a time in the near future when they're all gone. And so Rock and I laid out the entire show. And my wife Elaine and I write and direct and produce together, so we worked with Rock on the pilot script, which is now written. And then we had what are called table reads via Zoom. And so Marta Kristen from the original Lost in Space is in it, Robert Picardo from Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, Michael Harney from Orange is the New Black, Barbara Bain from, you know, Mission Impossible and Space 1999, Gates McFadden from Star Trek The Next Generation, Veronica Cartwright from The Birds and Alien. And it's just everyone I've asked to be part of any of these shows has said yes. And my goal is to create essentially an ensemble that will go from show to show to show. And so we might see someone playing a villain in one series and a hero in another, et cetera. And so Michael Harney, in fact, in Space Command, he plays our hero's father, and he plays a cop in Sweet Haven. So it's just phenomenal. It's so much fun, and I wanted to really show that, because I think that one group that's still being very stereotyped are older people, and older actors encounter this as well, where they end up playing coming down with dementia, coming down with cancer, or funny grandpa or funny grandma, when the older people I know are incredibly vital, incredibly involved in the world. They are not these stereotypical characters by and large. And I wanted to show that, and my thought was, by wiping out everybody else in the world, I could really bring a focus on that. And it's been great fun.
You know, Mark, in one of your recent YouTube videos, you talked about the fact that you're a believer in showcasing characters that are aspirational, that you
yes.
really want to believe in, because heart of hearts, they want to transform society in a good way. And in watching
yes.
the clips from Space Command on YouTube, which is the show that you're involved with, and you also have a ensemble of science fiction actor names we know, like Billy Mooney and Mira Filan and so forth,
yes.
that's what you're out to do. Explain that thought process of what for you makes aspirational science fiction.
Sure. Well, you know, I grew up, three shows that made me want to be a writer were Star Trek, Twilight Zone, and Outer Limits, the original versions of those three great shows. And all of them presented the notion of compassion, the notion of active compassion, courage to reach out to others and be brave and rise to the occasion. And these were not empty values. I mean, Rod Serling and Gene Roddenberry had both been through World War II. They'd both seen life and death at its most extreme, and yet they emerged from that experience as young men with enormous compassion, enormous humanity. They were not pessimists. I mean, we forget this is during the Vietnam War, during the height of the civil rights movement. The cities were burning, but they still had, both of them were saying, we can create a better future. And that's what shaped me as a writer and shaped so many of us. And when I was looking around at the science fiction shows of a few years ago and the science fiction movies, they were all very dark, very dystopic. And I wanted to return to this message that, you know, and without it being preachy, but just saying, look, I want to create compassionate characters. I want to create characters who have some, you know, sense of their role in the world and who are not cynical. And it doesn't mean that you sugarcoat things, and it doesn't mean that you're you know, rose-colored glasses. It just means that you're offering some work that can inspire people and move people, and they can see themselves in that work. And I mean, we've created this enormous, wonderful art form, television, where we can reach the world and millions of people at a time. And I've been very lucky that so many hundreds of hours of work that I, you know, TV shows that I've done, still are being watched. Thank you for the comment about Space Precinct. That was a fun and very odd show. But a lot of my friends who are writers don't take that responsibility seriously, and they don't understand the power that this medium has. I don't want to waste my audience's time, and I'm not really trying to preach to them, but I'm just trying to say this is the world that, as I see it. My life has been, I mean, I've been married for 44 years, together with my wife for 45. My mother was very loving and compassionate. Love and compassion and connection, those are the counterweights to all the evil and all the chaos in the world. And seeing the common humanity of everyone is vital. And so I want to be on that side of the equation. And I think my characters should be too. They should reflect the world that's made my life so very good.
And how do you bring that out in Space Command? How do you bring out the compassion side?
Yes. Well, I basically pit two characters in an adversarial relation where one of them realizes ultimately that he's on the wrong side and that in order to do the right thing, he has to basically risk throwing away his career. He's in the military. And it's the issue of, do you do what's right even if there's a huge cost to you? And that's emotionally right. That's ethically right. And he makes that choice. He makes the correct choice. And Doug Jones plays this synthetic human who basically is sort of a future Spartacus. He's liberating his people. And it's just very interesting to see how this works. And Mira Furlan's character has a very good heart. And all of these characters have emotional wounds, but they also have the ability to reach out to others, the ability to take risks to help other people, survive and thrive. And so these are very real issues in the work. And so it's very clear when once you watch the show, you connect with these characters, just like all these characters we loved growing up, you know, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you can, you know, name all the wonderful TV shows that we've all loved. These are characters that you would like to hang out with, as opposed to some of the main characters, the lead characters on a lot of TV shows where, God, you wouldn't want them in your house. So I think, and as I say, the first hour of Space Command is on Mr. Sci-Fi, my YouTube channel, and we've shot 5 hours of Space Command so far, and this year we're going to be shooting the entire first season of the show.
It looks great, by the way. I've seen the clips from the opening episode, and the cast, the special effects, the theme music, everything just clicks.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It's a labor of love, but that's it's well worth doing. And the first 2 hours, we're about to release the first 2 hours and completed. And there's 1,800 visual effect shots in the first 2 hours, which is insane, but still very, very fun.
Yeah. Before you go, a couple of quick thoughts. First of all, what's your thought about the most recent Twilight Zone revival that Jordan Peele did for CBS All Access?
I think it was a great lost opportunity. I think that a lot of people think doing a Twilight Zone show or a Twilight Zone script is easy. It's not. It's deceptive in that way. It's very difficult. And you really have to study the form and have something you want to say, have something in your heart. Rod Serling didn't want to be a science fiction writer. He wanted to be the Arthur Miller of television. It was only when the censors shut him down that he chose science fiction and fantasy as a way of getting his message through. And that humanity is what comes across. That's why you can watch those episodes over and over and over again. And I think Jordan Peele thought it was going to be easy. And so there's some good episodes, but the batting average wasn't high. And I think a lot of the episodes were just kind of not well rendered. And so I think eventually we may get a Twilight Zone reboot that will be terrific, but that wasn't the one.
Mm-hmm. I recently saw the sci-fi marathon over New Year's. I had to ask you something. When I'm watching the sci-fi repeats, there seem to be scenes that are cut out, including some crazy scenes in some of the classic episodes. Who does that? Is that sci-fi or is that CBS TV distribution sci-fi for presentation?
No, that would be the network. The network that's airing it. So because they want to put commercials in or whatever, they cut the episodes down. Sometimes they even just speed them up, and that's terrible too because it changes
the
timing.
This past one, they really speed up the credits.
Yeah. So the real way to watch these episodes is either on something where you can watch them uncut or buy – like I did the Blu-ray set. I produced it and did 52-episode commentaries on it. And of course, the Blu-ray allows you to watch them unchanged from the original intent. They're gorgeous. I mean, and when you watch them – even when I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion, I had to work initially from episodes that they had cut down in syndication. There were scenes that I'd never seen before. And that can often be a revelation. So I would urge everyone to watch the uncut versions.
Yeah, I will give sci-fi credit on this last one because of the Christmas episode, Night of the Meek. When I've seen it before,
yes.
The last line that Rod Serling said, "And a Merry Christmas to you and all," was cut out with the sound. They brought it back this time around. So I want to give them credit for that.
Good.
On the other hand, Odyssey of Flight 33, the last words by John Anderson, you know, where he says to everyone on the plane, please settle back and pray. That still gets cut out.
Yes.
I understand why. It's a crazy cut.
God. Yeah, I mean, again, because they're cut by the individual station, and so there's no telling if the person has any creative gift at all. Rod was extremely dismayed when he saw these episodes in syndication. He said it was like, you know, a room full of butchers on a steer.
Mm-hmm. Final question. Is there a Twilight Zone episode, original series, that looking back now from when you did the original Twilight Zone Companion, you would say, you know what, maybe I underrated this episode. Maybe it's a better episode than I originally thought.
Yeah, the one that really I think spotlights that is the Bewitching Pool. It's about these kids whose parents are going through an acrimonious divorce, and they dive into the swimming pool and come up in this sort of backwoods paradise for children run by sort of this grandmotherly figure. And I thought it was kind of goofy, and it was written by Earl Hamner. And then once the book came out, The Twilight Zone Companion, someone wrote me and said, when I was a kid growing up, there were no divorced children in any of the TV shows, and my parents were going through divorce, and I saw that episode, and it let me know that I wasn't alone. And and I thought, that's valid. That's absolutely valid. So, yeah, that really showed me the value of that episode.
Yeah. For me, I am the night Coney Black, especially in light of critical race theory. I think Rod Serling was the first time talking about that, and I grant you, yes, some of the writing is pretentious. The acting is marvelous, by the way. Michael Constantine, who passed away last year, gives a wonderful performance. George Lindsay, his most ungoogled performance. Ivan Dixon was in The Big Tall Wish, so remember there. He's very good.
Yes.
But now I think in light of the whole critical race theory, which I find despicable, I think this episode is more powerful than ever, especially the end.
Well, I'll take another look at it. You know, I'm totally open to having my mind changed. And whenever people disagree with me, I don't mind at all, because I'm always open to. I mean, I'm not the same guy who wrote the book in his 20s, you know. So I'll definitely watch it again. I look forward to that.
Well, I have to say, Mark, I've enjoyed your book for years. It's a marvelous, marvelous tome, and it's one of the best, I think, books about a television series ever, because you go right into it. You more than just do the synopsis and the criticism. You also bring in the people who did the show, your interviews with Buck Houghton and the actors, and so on and so forth. Just marvelous and highly, highly, highly recommended. And, again, if you want to know more about The Twilight Zone Companion, check out Amazon.com. And, Mark, is there any way that people can stay up with you about what's going on with Showrunner Network?
Yeah, absolutely. If you subscribe to Mr. Sci-Fi on YouTube, it's Mr. SCI-FI, Mr. Sci-Fi. That's the best way to do it, because I'm posting every few days on there. And I don't just talk about Showrunner's Network or Space Command. I talk about all aspects of science fiction. It's really a lot of fun.
Do check it out. It's marvelous. Mark, thank you so much for coming on. It is a pleasure to finally have you on at last, and let's have you on again soon, and keep us posted on Showrunner Network. It's a fantastic project, and I'm looking forward to, especially the Rod Serling After Twilight. I hope it all comes through, and when it happens, you're welcome back anytime.
Great. Well, thank you, Simon. I've really enjoyed it, and you stay safe and stay well, and we'll talk again in the near future.
You got it. Take care. All the greatest, Mark.
Thanks. Bye.
Mark Scott Sicree joining us live from Los Angeles. Thanks to all of our guests for making these last 2 hours so memorable. Be with us again on Friday when one of our guests will be Adam Glass from the new Netflix series In From the Cold. He's the executive producer and showrunner. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. Tomorrow Televised was brought to you by audible.com, the audio marketplace of amazon.com. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For Tomorrow Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And if you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, find out what your medical situation is, check out due diligence on what's available to you, what options you have, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.